Devon-based Sunday Times best-selling writer Jane Corey is a journalist, a creative writing teacher, and has been writer-in-residence at a men's prison. Jane writes the most unputtable, downable books I've ever read. They're thrillers which twist and turn in all directions, and I can never guess which way they're going to go. Jane has been on Radio Gorgeous twice before, and today we're talking about her latest summer must-read. It's called I Made a Mistake, and it's published by Penguin. Hi, Jane. Welcome back.
Thank you. Always lovely to talk to you.
Lovely to talk to you. What's the inspiration for I Made a Mistake?
Well, there were two things, really. I wanted to look at what might make a woman who is married with two teenagers, not unhappily, but not totally happily either, who's always wondered what happened to her first love. And she runs an agency for extras. And I purposely gave her that job because I wanted her to meet quite a lot of interesting people. And as a result, she comes across that first love after 23 years and 3 months, and she has to make a decision. But Poppy, as her name is, lives with her mother-in-law. And I wanted to explore the mother-in-law, daughter-in-law dynamic, because everyone always thinks that actually the mother-in-law is usually the demon or somebody who you don't get on with. But Betty and Poppy are like mother and daughter. And the story is also told from Betty's point of view about her first love going back to the 1960s. And I do love that era. So it's got a definite vintage feel to it.
Fantastic. Yeah, it does. I really loved you. I love the way you always weave your stories together. So you specialise normally, well, it usually happens, and it's quite, can you hear me, quite normal women getting involved with manipulative men or women.
Yeah. Yes.
What's so interesting about the manipulative people, you know, that you...
Well, you know, what I'm particularly keen on, as you said, is normal women coming across something in their life that makes them act in an extraordinary way. So there have been times in my life where I've had to find an inner strength when I didn't think I had it, and I did. And that's actually a really important thing. So I always give my heroine a real challenge. Either they suddenly find themselves breaking the law without meaning to, or someone in their family does. And it's usually law-related, because I'm still heavily influenced by my time in prison, as it were. I worked 2 days a week for 3 years, helping men write. And that just gave me a great interest in all things to do with the prison and the law. And so there is part of my novel that is set in prison. I won't say what, because it will spoil the plot. But every now and then we get court scenes. And again, I won't say who's on trial. So it's quite a guessing game. Lots of twists and turns.
Lots of twists and turns. I just want to talk about the men, because you haven't, I don't think you've worked in a women's prison, the men you met in prison. Were they, you know, tell me about their personalities. How, you know, tell me about how they did try and get you on their side. Did they try and manipulate you? Were you hoodwinked at any point?
No. I mean, I was warned beforehand by staff that men could, quote, try to groom you, try to be friendly to get you on side. But I have to say that I was treated with extreme courtesy on all but a very few occasions. And once when I was verbally abused, the other men in the group immediately rounded on the man who had not been very nice. And having said that, I knew I had to make sure that there was a distance, both physically and mentally. And the thing about my work was to help them write. So they didn't have to come to me as part of an education lesson. They volunteered to come. And as a result, most of them were actually quite interested in writing. Not all of them actually could do it. Not all of them could read or write. And so they told me their stories and I wrote them down. But the thinking behind it was that writing can help us address our past and also our future. So the prison that I worked in had an artist in residence as well. It was very heavy on the arts, which was brilliant. And the whole idea was to try and make people look at what they'd done, to forge a better future, and also to feel better about themselves. And I did wonder, I questioned, why should prisoners feel better about themselves when they'd created such terrible pain on other people? But actually, if people are going to make better lives, they need to feel better about themselves. Because if you're constantly feeling awful and worthless, you sort of think, what's the point?
Exactly. You need to raise their self-esteem and make them believe in themselves, that they can go straight, that they can be a normal person, that they can be kind, that they're not just...
That's right.
I think it's terrible if you're painted one thing and that's it forever. No, everyone's got to have given another chance, you know, in life.
That's right. That's right.
Tell us, there is a very charming character in the book. And he's the ex, isn't he?
He's the ex, Matthew.
Can you describe him physically?
Yes, well, Matthew has presence in spades. I mean, in fact, there's a line I can read from the first chapter which sort of describes Matthew to a T, if you don't mind me reading it. Is that all right?
He's
just come into a room where Poppy is. It's actually a Christmas party. And she says, "I cannot breathe. Matthew Gordon is making his way straight towards me. Pops," he says, now standing so close that I can smell his minty breath. "No one has called me that for years. I am aware of several jaws dropping around me and the unspoken, please introduce me expressions. This is a man whose name would mean nothing to my children. It might not mean much to my generation either, unless they have encyclopedic memories, but it doesn't really matter. People would be staring anyway. This man is objectively drop-dead handsome in a 50-plus way, and he has presence in spades. Matthew puts out his hand to shake mine. His skin feels warm, just as it had 23 years and 3 months ago when it had last pressed against mine in my little Kilburn bedsit with its one-bar electric fire. Pops, what a lovely surprise." Yeah, I know. Whoa. I want everyone to fall in love with Matthew.
Exactly.
But there is a side.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. You've got to like all your characters, even if they have got a dark side, haven't
you? Well, I don't know if you have to like them all. I do think that you have to like your main characters, even if, as you say, if they've got a dark side, they don't seem particularly pleasant. You've got to find something in them that perhaps justifies to the reader why they might be acting in a difficult way. Because... that's the other thing I've learnt really over the years when writing, that a character has got to have a reason for doing what he or she does. And you need to play with the reader's emotions, so they might like them sometimes, they might not like them another time, but all the way along, why is Matthew like this? You know, why did he break off with her? Why has he acted like a cad? And there are reasons.
Exactly, exactly. So, Jane, your books have more twists than the Mekong River. How do you keep them up? Is it all planned before, or does it evolve with the characters and their actions?
Wow. Okay. Well, I've always loved twists. I enjoy sitting in front of a drama, or not necessarily a drama, but something with pace, with a sinister element in it, and saying to my second husband, actually, I reckon blah, blah, blah is going to happen.
Yeah, you like to guess it. Yeah.
I like to get that. And I do plot now quite thoroughly, and I never used to, but now I do. But I also give it breathing space, because you can think you've got the plot, but when your characters take their own life forms on, then they, as we just said now, will give you a reason for doing something, and it might not be the reason you had them down for in the beginning. So they may decide, instead of going to the Mekong Delta, which actually I have been down, they may decide to stay put, or they may decide to do something completely different, and it takes you by surprise. And actually, that's the eureka moment, because the minute your character decides to act out of turn, you know that you've breathed life into them.
Oh, I keep getting like spooky vibes.
Good.
I know what your characters are like. So it's like the things that are going on in your body and brain.
It's a great distraction at the moment, I can tell you. Yeah.
What else did I need to ask? Oh, yes. Tell us, sorry, I want to go back to prison again. Tell us about are the rules about what you wore? Were you allowed to wear perfume, makeup? Because you're a very pretty blonde woman, you know.
Oh, you're very kind. Well, bear in mind that this was a tricky situation for me. My first marriage had just ended. My weekly column on a woman magazine had also ended because of editorial changes. So my life was quite uncertain at the time. So I was feeling nervous inside. And when I went in on that first day, I said to myself, you know what, you're just going to have to look as though you're okay about this. Because if you look scared, you just, you know, it doesn't look good.
It's like when a teacher comes in and looks scared. Remember how we all took advantage of that teacher?
Oh, well, you see, I was a good girl. I didn't do things. Oh. He didn't do things there. But I can see how that can happen. Yeah. Definitely can see how that can happen. So I would wear a smile. I'd wear three things. I'd wear a smile. I'd wear trousers, which was not mandatory. They didn't make you wear trousers. In fact, a lot of women didn't. But I thought it was a much safer thing to do. So I wore trousers. Having said that, as I said, it was all absolutely fine, apart from one chap who followed me around. And I made a mistake in looking him up. And after that, I was never alone with him again. I made sure I wasn't alone with him again because I wasn't supervised by a prison officer. You know, I would run my workshops without any supervision because I wasn't the manpower to do that, apart from when we had guests coming in. So going back to what I was wearing, I would wear trousers. I would never wear a low cleavage, never. And in fact, I normally wore very high necks. And I would wear my Chanel No. 5. Oh, and the reason I wore that is that... I've always worn it and it made me feel good. And yes, you might think, well, is that sending off the wrong message? But actually it made me feel okay. So that's right.
Interesting, very interesting. What about getting into the actual prison? Was that
interesting you to say that, because I was just going to go on to keys. So the main rule was about keys, which was actually don't lose them and don't give them away, otherwise you're out, very understandably. So on my first day, I was given the key chat and was basically handed a belt with keys and told that you didn't let them out of your sight, you never took your belt off.
Yeah.
That if a key happened to me, you had to wait there until somebody came by with some help. You always had to sign in and out and make sure that your keys were taken at the same time by the officer. There were one or two occasions that I heard about where officers went home with them, or people who worked there went home with them, and that's, you know, can be a dismissible offence. And you just didn't lose sight of those keys. So that was really important. With a whistle. That was my only defense. I, at the time, was the kind of person who'd have to go back and check my own front door about 5 times to make sure I'd locked it. So this cured me, because there were so many doors to unlock in prison that you had to be really mindful when you close them. I mean, mindful was not a popular word then. Nobody really thought about being mindful the way they are now, but it's the best way of describing it. You had to say to yourself, I am locking this door, therefore I don't need to go back to check it. Because there were so many doors to unlock and lock that you wouldn't get out of the prison that night if you had to go back every time to check. So.
I think you're incredibly brave. So lastly, why I Made a Mistake is different than your other books. What makes it stand out?
Well, there are as many twists. Well, not there are twists, but it focuses very much on that relationship between a mother and her mother-in-law and a woman and her husband who have drifted apart, basically. And you want to know whether they can get back and whether it's the right thing for them to get back. Mm-hmm. And
quite a boring thing.
Sorry?
He's quite a boring dentist, isn't he? Sorry to be rude, but
he is quite a boring dentist. But there may be more to him than you think. There may be more to him than you think. And again, you see, that goes back to what we were saying. Mm. Yes, Stuart does seem a little dull, but there is much more to Stuart than meets the eye. And that comes out as the book continues. So, and I had to work quite hard on that, you know, because he would have been quite easy to have made in the stereotypal boring professional. But actually, sometimes people like that take you by surprise.
Exactly. Fantastic.
It's always the quiet ones. That's what someone said to me once. It's always the quiet ones.
Ah, exactly. So how's your lockdown been? Because we're all in lockdown all over the world.
We are indeed. Well, I have to say that writing has saved me, because I've been in lockdown for years and years writing, because that's what I choose to do, love to do. But what has I found really hard is the fact that I normally look after my little grandchildren 2 days a week. And my life was absolutely frenetic before that lockdown. You know, I'm contracted to write a novel a year. And so I love that. But at the same time, I was fitting in my looking after my grandchildren 2 days a week, where my daughter worked and son-in-law worked. So that was an 11-hour, two-day-a-week job. And there were times when I was on my knees because they're little. But I would give anything to go back to those days now, anything at all. And I don't have them. And that leaves the most enormous gap. I mean, I'm able to see them now, but only at 2 meters. And it's not the same as cuddling them and having a normal day with them. I swim. We moved my second, when I got married again, my second husband and I moved to the coast. So I swim every morning in my wetsuit. And sometimes I swim in the late afternoon as well. And that is fantastic. It's just brilliant. I'm able to completely chill out doing that. And much to my surprise, I have started gardening.
Oh.
I never thought I'd be a gardener. And things have grown. So I'm now eating spinach breakfast. My husband is not eating anything I grow. I much prefer to get his from the supermarket. But it gives me a real thrill. I think because everything's had to stop, the fact that I can get things going in the garden, and as I said, I have black fingers. My sister was the one who inherited our mother's green fingers. It gives me quite a kick in a way I never thought it would. So
wonderful. Yeah. So there has been some positives.
Right. It has. But the other thing I should have mentioned actually was when this first happened, I was at that stage in a novel where I couldn't work for 3 weeks because I was waiting for some notes to come back from editor. And I thought, well, what am I going to do? Because normally when I'm in crisis, I write even harder. So I started writing what I call my corny virus diary, which is on my Facebook page. And I call it corny virus because a great uncle of mine wrote to me at the beginning and said, I hope you're getting through this corny virus. It's a bit of a nuisance. And actually the name took the fear out. So it's on my Jane Corry Facebook page, if anyone wants to look. And but also a lot of promotion is going on. I Made a Mistake, which again is a great diversion. It's on offer at the moment on Kindle for 99p. Normally it's $7.99. Yeah, that's just at the moment. I don't know how long for. And also we did have some great news, which is that I sold over 1 million copies of my my thrillers, my last four books.
Wow.
That's exciting. Yeah, that was nice.
You are brilliant. And whenever you contact me and say, Josephine, I will always say yes, because as I said, in between this, I've read other books of yours because I got so excited about your writing. I genuinely think you're brilliant.
Well, it's always lovely to talk to you because you're such good fun. So,
well, thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous. So I Made a Mistake by Jane Corry, the Sunday Times bestseller, now 1 million copies later. Is published by Penguin. Thank you so much.
Cheers. And am I allowed to say, so it's on sale in supermarkets, bookshops, and online.
Exactly.
In all formats, paperback, Kindle. Oh, and I should have mentioned something very exciting. Also on ebook, and the narrator is the actress Amelia Fox.
Oh.
And she was asked to give a recommendation by Richard and Judy when she was on Richard and Judy's book programme during lockdown. And she said, I Made a Mistake, which was really exciting.
So thrilling. Gorgeous Amelia Fox.
I know, she's so lovely, isn't she? She really is.
And have you listened to it yet?
I am actually just started, and I love her voice. I mean, it's perfect for it. And very exciting.
Oh, yes, of course, because she'll know all the acting world. So it's really good. Yeah.
Yeah, no, she's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Because we do go a little bit into the world of the glamorous world.
Yes, we do. And I had quite a lot of fun researching that. I spoke to many people who run extra agencies and people who were extras. And I actually got quite tempted. I rather like the idea of being an extra.
The only trouble is I always think they'd prefer me if I was my natural grey colour, because they want people that they can have in like 16th century and, you know what I mean, all different centuries. And I think being blonde...
Because I'd be the same, but you know what? When I was doing my research, somebody told me about one of their clients who got herself a tattoo, and she was meant to be in some drama with Henry VIII. And I looked it up, and do you know, now I need to probably double check this, but tattoos did come out just after, I think, but I need to double check that, but it wasn't that far after Henry VIII. So they go back quite a way, but it probably didn't go down terribly well to have someone with an I love Danny across her arm when she was going to be in a Henry VIII drama.
Not use her, or did they put makeup?
No, they didn't use her.
So if you want to be an extra, let your hair be a natural colour, as natural as can be. Don't have tattoos that are visible. I think you can
unless it's for a tattoo film or something where it fits.
Exactly. I also think tattoos, whatever you have, will date you, because even now, because tattoos have got such fashions, you know, so they are dangerous things to have.
I've told one of my children that many times.
You have visible tattoos.
One of them has
into tats.
I thought he'd drawn it on with a barrow first and then discovered that that wasn't the case.
Your children, I'm afraid they get uncontrollable after a certain time.
Well, they're lying. They're skin.
Lovely to speak to you.
Okay. Lovely to speak
Thanks
to you.
Coming on to Radio Gorgeous. Please get out and buy A Made a Mistake. Mm-hmm.